The clients are buying. The clients are buying. Everybody, the clients are buying. They're buying. Everybody, they're buying. Guys, they're not buying anymore. Guys, nobody's buying. What are we going to do? I keep myself busy, you know. I keep doing this. You know?
You're so busy. That's why you're never worried about what's going on in the world around you, because
I control what's around me.
Laser focused.
I control what's around me. You know. I know that I'm going to go and get some lunch. I know after this podcast, I'm going to go train some jiu-jitsu, and then I've got some stuff to do downtown.
Some people need to know what's going on around them in order to make major decisions that they have to make, or you know. But I mean, I guess a realtor has a very good vantage point when it, not a bad
realtor. Clients are buying. The clients are buying. Everybody, the clients are buying. They're buying. Everybody, they're buying. Guys, they're not buying anymore.
But
guys, nobody's buying. What are we going to do?
You control your destiny, like you were saying. I mean, you only need so many houses or deals a year, right? So it's like, and I used to say that all the time when people would ask me about my competition in construction. I was like, what competition? I need like three jobs a year to have a wonderful year. Who am I competing with?
Yeah.
Right? You just do your thing and you go out there and you don't worry about what's around you. But you don't, at least for work, you don't really have long-term decisions to make, right? It's like, it's always like, go.
Where do I got to be? What do I got to do? How am I going to get there?
What's next? What's next? Not like what's in, I mean, I know you're different. You're smart. I know you got a plan. You think out ahead. But like for the realtor part of things, you don't really have to worry about much other than like, just get it done. Keep doing it or do it more, right? But it's not like, these major world events or things that happen in India really affect you personally. But as I say it, it just sounds stupid because it does.
But does it though? Like, okay, here's my example. This week, what was this major event that was so important? The kids needed to be off school.
What the fucking letdown was that, eh?
The people were taking time off of work and booking it. They were sending out Christmas cards 3 years early to show where they were on April 8th, 2024.
The day the portals opened to the underworld.
And so it reminded me of Y2K. It reminded me of Y2K.
What a letdown.
Because Y2K, and then there was also the end of the Mayan calendar in 2012.
Oh,
right. So there's been quite a few of these things where people just bite onto this stuff and they're like, this is it. This is the one that's going to take us all down and we're all going to remember where we were that day. I remember I was on the beach in Florida because I was a kid and my parents brought me down to Florida for the Y2K with a bunch of my cousins and stuff. And yeah, nothing happened.
Absolute nothing burger.
Absolute nothing. The numbers rolled over from 1999 to 2000 and nothing changed. No money was spewing out of the ATMs. Nobody's name was changed or house was transferred into a stranger's name. It was basically just an ordinary New Year's. And so that's why, Daryl, when these federal housing announcements come out and they've got these new ideas, or there's a new break in the war, or there's a new
but they made a PDF
in a temple,
they
in
made
the middle
a PDF
of a Turkish desert.
It says we're going to solve the housing crisis on the PDF. This is serious.
I remain cautious. I say,
cautiously cautious?
I'm just cautious. I'm just like, let me just wait and see what happens here, you know? And we
that
had the same
approach.
Yeah. We had rule changes with real estate, with trust in Real Estate Services Act. It sounds so warm and comfortable when you say it, trust, the word trust. We're going to make some changes here, folks, that are going to be better for the realtors, but we're going to put the word trust in it. So everybody's going to really think it's for them. But anyways. So, Trust in Real Estate Services Act.
This
is
a new thing? A new thing?
No, that was December 1st, 2023.
Why are we talking about it now?
Because I'm just giving you an example of my cautious attitude.
Oh, I see.
And instead of me reacting and starting to go into all these different Facebook groups and everything else like a lot of people were doing, I said, I'm just going to wait this out. And someone's going to iron this thing out really well. And then I'm going to watch a 1-hour webinar on it. And I'm going to be caught up to speed. because other people were investing like weeks and weeks and weeks trying to figure it out and digest and read the reports. And I said, look, I don't have time for that. So I waited. And then the head guy summarized it all in an hour, and I watched it all, and boom, I'm ready to go.
Because you don't need to know. It doesn't matter. You
I
just
mean, apparently I do need to know. It's the real estate act. But the bottom line is, you know, I know when to you know, overreact and when not to overreact.
So when do you overreact? What would TK overreact to? Like, what would be something that you would actually react at all to?
So, I mean, I would say usually there's a lot of overreacting thoughts. My head is full of overreacting thoughts.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I don't think the action comes out very often.
The action of
I've
what?
Convinced
like a
myself,
panicked?
I've convinced myself that the thoughts are usually overreacting. And I say, calm down in there, you guys. This ain't going to be so bad. Daryl's just late. Don't worry.
Right.
It's any minute now he's going to show up. Nothing's wrong. Now, I had a client this week who wasn't answering his phone and texts and emails. And about a week of no communication, I'm going, oh, my God,
what?
Something must
this
have happened.
This guy better be dead.
So I was prepared to go to his house and check on him to see if he was still alive. I was prepared. But anyways, I called him and he answered and everything was fine. So didn't need to overreact on that one.
Yeah, I get a feeling that, I mean, I know I do that in my own head, that I, you know, I start catastrophizing and I start thinking of, okay, what does this mean now? And I start going back into the text and like reading the words and going, would they have said this word if they meant, you know, what I'm wanting them to say or the opposite, you know? And I stir myself up into all these crazy scenarios. And then it's like it's the same thing. But
I've predicted the future a total of 0 times in my
life.
So I just don't trust those future predicting thoughts. I'm like, you know, this is probably another one of those times.
So, but
better just chill here.
So, but things like these housing plans, okay, maybe you don't have to pay attention to it, but
of course I pay attention. I read it. I understand it. I go, okay, I see why they're doing it. But I mean, like so far the federal government and housing plans, they're batting 0 as well. Like they never end up figuring anything out. They come up with these plans to waste a bunch of money and never goes anywhere. It never does anything.
That's
doesn't do
the
anything.
Problem.
And then we go, all right, well, okay. But we talk about it for months on end, thinking like it is going to do something, and it never does. So,
well, because we think they'll actually implement the stuff or implement it in a way that's helpful. And we see that it just doesn't happen. It's all lip service and all kinds of
political crap,
political,
you know?
Garbage. But a lot of people are reacting to this new Canada housing plan as having stuff in it that will actually make a dent.
I want to talk about it. Yeah.
Right.
Talk about it with the guest, or
there's a lot of stuff here that I see that is actually, you know, designed to make a dent, but
tell me
there's other problems. There's
what's the first one you want to talk about? This is a big news issue. What's the first one you want to talk about?
Like, comment, and subscribe, especially Daryl. And we promise DK is going to come in after, and then I'll try to come in as third. Just, we got to get the algorithm going. Please, guys, let's get over. What are you guys at? 7,000? 8,000? Let's get you to 10,000 by how many months do we want to give 10,000 subs? It gets harder, right? So that's cool. You're sandbagging it. You're going to get there. Okay, that's cool.
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. So one moment, please. They seem to be comparing a lot of stuff to the war times, like a war effort. Like they're really making it
post World War II.
Yeah, we need to get back to the
plan
days.
To build more housing.
And so it's interesting because they make it seem like it's so bad, and then they come out with all these stupid.
They had no zoning bylaws or anything back then. They were just like, you want to build a house there? That's where you want to build the house? All right.
You want to put 3 apartment buildings up there? Like,
you're put
just
3
put a
there?
Park in the middle. We don't care what you do. Put
how
a
much
park.
Are you going to pay in tax afterwards? Yeah. Okay.
Right.
All right. Go
no
ahead.
Tax. We don't care about tax. Just build
property
shit.
Tax after. No problem. All right.
Bonus for the ugliest building. So anyway, so they make announcements like we're going to build 3.9 million homes by 2031 with this plan. They came out this week and they said that they're going to allow 18-story wood timber construction in the next building code release, okay? And
that seems safe.
Well, now we got 30-year amortizations for like new home
new construction,
purchases.
Right? Which I think makes sense. I mean, look, I think the amortization You know, like I know everyone's like, well, it's going to take you forever. But look, I mean, some people aren't buying a house in order to be able to, you know, pay it off. Like, you know, like they're buying a house. That sounds bad, but they're buying a house because they want security.
For a payment.
They just want to be able to live in a house that they can decorate themselves, that they can, kids can go to school for the next 20 years in that area. They don't want to worry. There's so much fear with tenants when they're renting a place about their landlord going to be selling and all that kind of stuff.
They're more afraid of the landlord than they are the bank coming and saying, hey, you didn't pay for the last few months.
They just want security. And so, you know what, if giving people extended amortizations and you're like, listen, man, like you're literally never paying this house off. You're going to be here forever. But they're like, well, my payments are still going to be close to what I would be paying for rent and I never have to move. There's lots of people who would sign up for that. So again, I think amortization should be longer than what they are for all housing, but it's a step in the right direction for new construction because it does show the obvious signs that people bought a bunch of new construction housing and got screwed. But also it means that builders can charge more and sell more because people will be able to afford more when they have a higher amortization for new construction.
And so hold on a sec though, like 30-year amortizations, aren't people getting that everywhere now? Like no problem.
Exactly.
You just renewed your mortgage, didn't you? I know I'm working on mine. 30 years is like a given right now, isn't it?
I just started and you guys are pumping real estate right out of the gate. I love it, man. We're going to get slaughtered in the comments here. Okay, cool. TK, good job.
Baz, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
I didn't even
know
you joined the show here. I had it on minimize. I was waiting for the sound. I was just filling the air here.
No. Awesome, man. Yeah. 30 years. Listen, man, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm one of those conservative dudes. I'm one of those ones. Listen, I've probably lost a lot of money because I was always under the impression of low debt, don't over leverage. So I'm not the right guy to ask. Is it right? Is it wrong? I mean, at this point, there's no way you can afford a house unless you're going for long amortizations, right? So what else do you do? You can't do it on a 25, or very few people can anyway.
I don't know why they didn't make it 50. Like 30 seems kind of stupid, if you ask me. And this one's only on new homes, but I don't understand.
There are products available though, aren't there? I'm pretty sure there are products and there have been products available all the way from 25 to 40.
Yeah, I mean, people, well, I think a lot of those were negative amortizations.
I don't think they have 40 anymore that you can get. And then it also depends on if it's a new purchase or refinance.
Yeah, so that's right.
But you can get a 30-year amortization on a refinance right now, no problem.
A refinance, but on a new purchase.
On a new purchase, you couldn't get that?
I don't know for sure. Again, I'm not a mortgage broker, but
yeah, we're
definitely,
not
know for sure on refinance you can.
Oh, in an off-market, realtors are mortgage agents and they're appraisers. But now everybody's
now we just
like, yeah, that's
don't
not
say
my,
nothing.
Yeah.
We don't say nothing. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So on top of the 30-year AMs, there was like 35-year AMs under certain conditions if you're refinancing. They talked about that this week too. Basically, you have to be refinancing and prove that you're under hardship. So this is a brilliant play. It's like, you were on a 25-year amortization. You can't afford it. You lost your job, but we're going to give you a 35-year amortization now because you're showing hardship here. We're going to give you a little bit more rope to hang yourself with, I guess.
I've had two people that tried the hardship because I think last time we spoke, we briefly spoke about this. So some of the big lenders were offering this hardship thing. So they would add 5 years to your current amortization without having to requalify. So that was the big thing. Like people can't
not requalify.
Exactly. Like, so everybody's trying to do it without the requalifying aspect. Otherwise they're in trouble. Right. So I did have two that tried the hardship angle and it was funny. They didn't get it, but the banks, I think they just basically ended up renewing at whatever the amort was. Now they're underwater big time. So now they're obviously exploring their options in terms of what to do, but, yeah, they didn't get the hardship thing. So this is something we spoke about months ago, and I thought it would be easier to get. One guy couldn't. And I have one lady right now. She's a downsizer, and she's going to be a downsizer. If this doesn't work, she's going to be listing because she's coming up for renewal in August. And you can imagine you're in fixed income. You have a bit of a reverse mortgage on your house. That thing renews. What do you do? Just chips away the equity.
Yeah. Sure.
There's definitely a lot of different scenarios there right now. But I think the message is here coming from, you know, the government side of policy and everything else like that, is that this housing affordability issue is not that easy to solve, you know, and that, you know, the market obviously has taken out a little bit of the pain that buyers have, but really it's more unaffordable than ever because of rates. So it's like when you go and you look at what your monthly payment is and how much you're going to be spending every single month to live in a house today compared to when it was at its peak in the early days of 2022, you're spending more money per month and for the same house. And so, you know, you have to look at all these different angles. And, you know, what I get from it all is that basically no one has a clue on how to be able to make houses more affordable in Canada. They just don't have a solution. There's no way to do it. There is no program. There is no amount of houses that can be built. The market couldn't do it. Interest rates couldn't do it.
There's like, no labor to do it.
We're just in this sort of situation that everyone needs to find a way to solve. And, you know, people don't like my solutions, like, you know, sharing a house with your brother or
drive further,
living in a smaller place or driving further. But, you know, it looks like these are the.
But where are the nurses going to live? Where will the nurses live?
Bunk beds.
This is what always happens.
I know. I don't like
this. This is the truth. It's a spread. The country is going to just have to spread out. We're going to have to live in Saskatchewan. Sorry, everyone. We're going to have to live in Manitoba.
I think it's a great place to live.
Sorry.
I want Vass to know what the... I want him to give us some answers here. So on some of the things that they're going to be doing. So one of the things is that they're going to be leasing public lands. All right. Vass, give us your thoughts on that. Leasing public lands, using underused public lands to build housing on through long-term leases that developers will be able to, you know, partner up with the government. How do you feel about that?
So what is it turning into, like a co-op or something? Like, I guess you're buying
a land lease. They have land leases on condos. They have land leases in different communities, detached houses and stuff like that.
Not a fan.
So you don't think that this is going to add more housing?
No, of course. Listen, a bunch of stuff is going to add more housing, but everybody, the entire dream is to be a homeowner, not be a long-term lease owner. Like, long-term leases work for downsizers.
You'd own a unit. Like, for example, a condo. Condo can lease. The condominium corporation leases the land, builds the building, but you own title to the unit, and you can sell that title. It's your unit, right? So you own real estate.
But the land is correct me if I'm wrong. If I own a condo, I also own like my proportionate share of that land that the condo is owned, right? So there's no lease agreement. I don't know enough about
that. Doesn't that have to be on a rental building, TK? You can't lease the land and then sell condos on it.
Yes, you can.
You can? What happens when the lease runs out?
I think it's a life lease. Everyone's going to be dead.
It's a life lease. This is popular. This is popular with downsizers. I know all about these things. They exist already, but they're good for somebody who doesn't care about long-term appreciation and all that stuff. Like, you can go into one of these, you can go and track the appreciation. It's not very good. Okay. So it's not like true home ownership. So at that point, just bring it on as rental supply. Just keep it simple.
Can they keep it as rental supply? Right. So,
Just bring it as subsidized housing, public housing or subsidized housing or just rental. I mean, I don't know. I think, like, what do I want? What I want for people is to own homes, not a life lease where the government's involved in my life lease. Like, none of that nonsense. Just give me a house. Like, let me buy a house, an affordable house in a decent place. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to raise my kids in a nice place. And these life leases, again, there's a time and place, but I think it's like for downsizers. Downsizers like them because it makes sense. They're cheaper to buy.
Take care of all the maintenance of the land.
Exactly. It's all done, but I don't need that. I want to build my own equity. I want to add my elbow grease to my house. I want to, you know, do the things that typical people want to do.
But so the typical person doesn't want to do it where they can afford to do it. This is a giant part of the problem is that you have a bunch of people that don't
want to. I want my housing now.
And I want it here. Right?
I want to live. You know?
I
want to
live right
me
here.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Join the fucking club. And I don't want to work all fucking day.
So here's it. I have a theory and I've been thinking about this. Let me know if you agree or not. So the big argument is right now it's harder than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Can we all agree that is true?
No.
Okay, hold on. I'm asking from an affordability point of view, is it harder now to afford a house?
It is definitely affordability has less affordable. Yes.
Okay, so I think we can all agree it's a lot more difficult for somebody starting out right now to buy a house. I think this is factual.
A lot more difficult. Just it's affordability. More expensive. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, it's more expensive. Okay, which is pretty much the primary
factor.
We're
not giving into the narrative.
But people aren't productive anymore. People are
useless. Hold on. Let me give you the whole theory. So I think we can agree it's a lot more difficult financially to afford a house right now. So if I was 20 years old right now, it would be very difficult. I could replicate my current lifestyle, but it would be a lot more difficult, okay? Financially, right? It would require more sacrifices, more everything. So here's what's happened. There are two things I think that have happened in the last 20 years. Affordability has gotten a lot worse, but also in that exact same time period, expectations have gotten much higher. Mm-hmm. Meaning I rented when I graduated from York, I rented a dumpy little place in Midtown. It was 280 square feet in a basement. I couldn't fit in the shower. It was like 5'6". I paid $700, but my expectations were low. And that's how I bought my first house. It was dumpy, renovated, all that stuff, right? I just feel many people now expect a certain amount of quality or size or location. And this is where it just doesn't jive. Like, there's got to be a give. Yes, it's more unaffordable now, but also expectations have grown. So it's a double whammy. So people are conflating these two things when it's, yes, both things are true, but one you kind of have control over, right? So you can lower your standards. And I think this is just from some parenting books I've read of how if you raise kids in a ton of comfort, it's very difficult for those kids to grow up and have the same amount of luxuries that you did, that you gave them when they start out. So let's say you live in this lavish house in Thornhill or in North York. Like, how are your kids going to replicate that at 25, right? And right now everybody wants it immediately. Yeah, it's like, you're not going to do it. So maybe in your 40s you can, but you're not going to do it in your 20s. So I think there's this expectation and balance.
Yeah, and I agree. And so expectations, and where I was going to go with this is the same place that you just went, Buzz, is I think there's more money that people can be making younger. And why is this all? Because of the internet and social media. And like, this is the root of the problem. Or it's the instigator of the solution. I mean, like, whichever way you want to look at it. It's making people's expectations higher because they're seeing all these great things online, but it also gives them an opportunity to make more money. So I believe it's easier for people to be able to have a lifestyle that they dream of today than ever before. That's my opinion.
A lifestyle, I believe just that not if you, where they want it to be.
No, what I'm trying to say is that I believe that the opportunities today are greater for people who are actually willing to go out and look for it. And I'm not saying I did or I am or I'm not trying to claim here that like I figured it all out. But I do believe that somebody nowadays has opportunities that they never had 20 years ago and that they could do things with their life, their time, their money, their investments, all that kind of stuff in ways that they never could before, which could lead them to a lifestyle that they dream of. That being said, people are using 20 years ago methods to make money and have work ethic and all that kind of stuff, but then have the expectations, like Vass was saying, of 2024, which is I need to have my own condo and it needs to have open concept and it needs to be like, you know, all the things that people think that they deserve and that they're like, well, why does it cost $3,000 a month to get that? And they're like, how could anyone afford this? Right?
How can anybody afford it on the old system? Here's the solution.
On the old system. Yeah.
It's like, wake up and realize that it doesn't work like that anymore and that there isn't value in the guy who sits in the office all day and works for the other guy. Okay? If you want to have the stuff that the other people have, you're going to have to fucking work like the other people work. And so what does that mean? That means being an electrician in the winter in Canada now is a wonderful avenue to have that life. So people need to start wanting to work hard now, because even the Bank of Canada came out and says that we have a productivity crisis. We have a bunch of lazy fucks who don't want to do what needs to be done. They all expect that, like when I was younger, that you just needed to get a good job, right? Go to school, get a good job, and then you can afford a house. And that is how it worked. But If you just worked as a waiter at some shitty restaurant and you worked every day, like you could only do X even back then. You were renting back then, right? But if you were the hustler and you were waiting on tables and you were selling some other thing on the side, you got to leapfrog all the other guys who were sitting around going, I can't afford to do this. It's too fucking hard, right?
The problem is, though, is you 20 years ago grew up saying, I'm going to become a nurse and have this great life. And I'm not picking on nurses. They're wonderful people. I'm just trying to say, now you're a nurse. You've been doing it for 10 years. You're looking at your income and you're going, I don't get the the lifestyle that 20 years ago when I signed, when I set on this course, I was promised. And yes, you're right.
Yeah,
those two things now are no longer equal. They're, you know, one went this way, the other one went this way. And now you've got this differential that you're saying, oh, how come my income doesn't get me where I needed to be? And so you've got to adapt. And people don't like to hear that, because once they've got their job and they've been to school, they say,
oh, I did what I was supposed to do.
I don't have to do anything anymore. I can just, so many guys, I'm going to the gym and the guys are just training and, like, you know, we're all working and stuff. They're like, I don't even go to work. I just tell them I'm at work and I come and train jiu-jitsu, or I, you know, they think I'm there right now, but I don't care. And it's like this type of attitude, like, great. Like, I'm happy for you that you get paid your wage or whatever all day long, no matter what, but, you know, don't come back later on and say, well, how come I'm not able to go on vacation, or how come I'm not able to, you know, buy an investment property, or why am I still paying my mortgage off when I'm ready to retire? The answer lies within.
Lazy fucks. Right?
It's a global city, man. We're a global city. Like 20 years ago, we were just starting to become a global city. And, you know, like you said, you have to adapt, and adaptability wins, and it's more difficult. And so what? Figure it out or leave. I mean, what else can you do, right? Like, I usually don't work with a lot of first-time home buyers unless, like, I feel like they're realistic. I have one, I call him a kid. He's graduating university now. He's going to get a little bit of money from his parents. And the way he's thinking about it is very smart. Like, we went and looked at a few duplexes and triplexes. Can you believe this? For under like $1.1 million, there's an opportunity to have like a triplex at King West, at like King and Bathurst, that pulls massive rents. But like, people won't believe it, or they won't look. Like, we went and looked at one. It sold for 900 and change. It was a legal duplex, but you could have made it into a triplex by just digging out some walkouts, you know, adding some ceiling height, this, that, and the other. And there you go. And you have something that's pulling in cash. You have other kids that are, you know, looking at one plus then condos in slightly larger buildings, and they house hack, as they call it. But like, they'll convert the living room into one living space, the den is another living space with a Murphy bed, and then there's the bedroom. Listen, I'm not saying that that's the ultimate thing, but if somebody's paying your mortgage and you're pulling it off while you're in your 20s and you're working your ass off to build a career, you know, do whatever you're doing, I mean, to me, that is a compelling proposition. That's something I would do if I was starting out now. I wouldn't sit and wait for Justin Trudeau, whatever government's going to be in here, to save me, right? Because they're not going to do anything for us. Like, that's why I don't even watch the news.
Well,
like,
here's what they're doing.
30-year amorts. Who cares?
Exactly. They're extending the 30-year amortizations for first-time buyers purchasing new builds. We got rental.
And new builds
history
are already selling at 20% premium. So what the hell is the point? The value has always been in resale if you want to make money.
We got a tenant protection fund. We got improving credit scores for your payment history and increasing the home buyer's plan withdrawal limit by $25,000 and extending the grace period to repay by an additional 3 years.
Or check this out. You can lowball a listing that's been poorly listed, get it for 10% below market value, fix it up. You've put in 50K, 60K of equity right out of the gate by buying well, and then you're making money.
But
I
paid my rent on time, Bess.
Cool.
But I paid my rent on
good
time.
Good for you. I'm going to give you a participation. I'm going
to
give you a ribbon.
I went
to
the bank and I told them that I paid my rent. I mean, I haven't paid my credit card for 3 months.
Are they doing the credit score thing too, where they're going to give if you pay your rent on time, I think it improves your credit or something.
There's no rules here. Yeah. There's just a bunch of written.
It's on their website.
Bullshit.
It's on their website.
But they don't have details as to what's actually going to happen.
Who actually cares? Does anybody actually live their life planning around this stuff? I do wonder if does anyone actually take this seriously?
No, but there's people that sit and watch the news, and there's things that sway that vote decision one way or another. And when they hear,
but those people are 65 plus, so none of it is applicable. I'm just saying, is anybody under
35? There's a Karen out there writing letters saying, I pay my rent every month on time, but when I went to go get approved at the bank, they said no. And so somebody in the federal government was like, oh my gosh, we should try to give them some credit. Right. And so they're like, we'll make it so that their credit report gets improved, even with those rent payments. But what she didn't outline was that she makes $40,000 and has no down payment. And so maybe that has something to do with why the bank didn't approve your application. You know what I mean? And so this is where it's all coming from.
So, people need to not just figure out a way to make money in real estate. Now, people need to actually figure out something of value. People need to become valuable, right? Whether it's content creation, whether it's an invention, whether it's some kind of manufacturing, whether it's some kind of natural resource, like people have to start doing shit. They can't just flip a house or renovate and flip a house.
I think that's value add. I think that's value
add. I'm not saying it's not value add, but when it's 25% of the economy and that part of the economy is not doing well, we need other ways for people that if you want to make money right now, like real estate's probably not the best way for the majority of people to make money right now. Right. But there's so many opportunities out there for people right now.
It wasn't like when you say right now, it's because of that type of mindset. I need to make money right now.
No, never for certain people.
What I mean is real estate's never been a short-term type of investment play. There's very few people.
In Canada, it is for lots of people.
No, there's very few. The market, Daryl, we've talked about this 1,000 times. There's very few people who can show me 25 years that they've been able to figure out a strategy that works, you know, flipping houses or building or something. Every builder I've ever talked to says, well, back in 99, I got killed. And back in 2008, I got killed. And back in 2012, I got stuck with a few houses. Like nobody's strategy is foolproof. The only strategy in real estate that's foolproof is long-term. That's it. There is no other strategy that works 100% of the time. But if you hold it for 25 years,
it does.
You're going to win 100%.
So you're suggesting
You have a million TV shows saying that it works, right? Showing that it works, proving that it works.
I want to hear Vasa's question.
No, I was thinking of going looking at this condo to flip. Yes. And you guys are now discouraging me.
I'm not saying it won't work once, but if you did that same flip 25 times in a row every year, you would have years where it didn't work.
Well, I think, look, I've done it before. I'm just saying it's not like a full-time job, but I think if you buy well, I think it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Maybe you're
not
going to be able
typical.
And so if you bought in 2021 saying, man, I got a 30% discount on this great place, you woke up when that place was ready to be sold because you got private financing and that you finally finished the work in June 2022 and you're like, oh my God, I just lost the 30% buying discount that I bought with. And now I'm basically just breaking even, or then I got my fees and my land transfer tax and my real estate and the interest costs and all that. And so, you know what I'm trying to say, Bass? I'm not trying to say it's...
No, listen, I get
buy
it.
Buy the condo, go make some money. But
look, I bought one in 2021 and I flipped it in 2023 and I walked away. Like, I mean, it wasn't much, but whatever. It's not like I lost money.
Okay.
Yeah, but here's one, for example. Now I think, you know,
Sorry, Bass,
I've been flipping since 2016. It's the way most people do it.
I've been there, Bass. I was there, you make money and you go, wow, you know, I'm doing well. And then you lose money and you go, oh, how much was that really worth? So your time from 2021 to 2023, did you feel like that time you invested was worth the money you made?
Probably not. If I was like the mental bandwidth,
would you do it again?
Into it? Yeah.
That exact deal you would do again? 21 to 23, 2 years of work.
No, obviously knowing what I know now, I wouldn't. Yeah. But look, obviously I got caught in the interest rate squeeze as well. Meaning I saw the writing was on the wall. And for me, the biggest thing is that with condos, it's a little bit more speculative. So I wanted to get out. Like the same condo now is worth less money than like
the many other guys would have screwed that up, but you're smart enough to figure out
for me,
how to make it work.
And the thing is, the decoupling of condos in downtown Toronto is going to be a huge mess. I think over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see big change in values. But you know, now the way I think about it is with these flips, anything that doesn't require a permit where I can be in and out 30 to 60 days. So for example, to buy it now, close in 30 days, get it ready, put it up in the fall and get out. Cool. And I know the area and everything. So like I'm comfortable doing it. But you know what the biggest reason I'm actually considering doing this? It's not so much because, oh my God, this is a really good deal, although I think it is. But in the last 8 days, I've had 3 contractors that I've worked with in the past call me asking me for work, including the one that finished my basement not that long ago. So to me, this is one of those really good signs, because when you have these people available to you, first of all, you know they're not going to screw you around on price. And if they do, you have somebody that's lined up, ready to go when, you know, they're doing that to you. So to me, I'm like, you know what, this is a decent opportunity. The labor is there. You know, I can make, you know, whatever X amount of money that this may be worth to me over a 60-day period. So that's why I'm contemplating it. It's more of a timing thing. It's like, if I do this now, ready for fall, you know, maybe there's a rate cut, maybe sentiment changes. I don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty, but at least my costs, my budget to do this are capped. Like I can get it done under $80,000. I'm pretty comfortable, and that has buffer in it, and we're good to go.
Capped
right?
So budgets that's work out.
Sorry?
Capped budgets generally work out, to be fairly precise. Listen,
I'm just saying it's like a small rental, right? Like you're doing two bathrooms, a kitchen, some floors, paint this, fixtures.
Vas, Canada secondary suite loan program. But interest free loan up to $40,000.
Hold on.
40.
Up to 40,000.
The Atella units are like 200. I mean, I guess it's a start.
Secondary suite could be in your basement. You've already got a finished basement. You're just trying to legalize it. Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking about ADUs for a second. Never mind.
Well, you could use it for ADU, but yeah, you're right. 40 grand is not going to get you very far. But it's a loan that's low interest up to $40,000. What do you think?
I think that's great. It's fantastic.
Adds units?
Look, I'm not going to macro speculate.
People who weren't going to do a unit, does a unit?
Does 40 grand get you a basement unit?
Not from scratch.
So then what good is
this? It gets you pretty far. I mean, if you...
Legalize. You can legalize an already existing apartment.
Okay, legal. No, legal. You're not going to do legal for 40. That's for sure.
Are they going to give you a loan for not legal?
It's already finished. All you got to do is now add some egress windows, do some new ceilings, add in a sprinkler system,
fire-rated drywall, you need to have the ceiling height.
Like those type of things you could do for that. If it's already done, you already got a kitchen, you already got a bathroom, you already got like most of the work done.
Yeah, ha, ha, ha. Okay, 40 grand is going to get maybe some people somewhere, but hold on. Why is this good to give people cheap money to do this that weren't really thinking about doing this? Or is this to get people that were thinking about doing it to just do it? Like how is
add
this?
Units. Add units.
I know
it's but what are you solving
units.
For?
Where's the, what, right. What is, but what is the,
are you solving for affordability? For more, or are you solving for basement rentals for people to
create supply for housing, rental housing, right? Like they've got the GST already on the new builds. Now they're putting it over to student rentals. So they're going to allow universities to build with more tax advantages and stuff like that.
And do
so
their
now
own
they're saying
planning.
Homeowners can add another unit. What's
universities
that,
can do their own planning. They're saying on their own land, they can like, I guess, get away with different stuff than us normal people that aren't schools. Us non-scammers, you know, get different rules. It's pretty crazy. So hold on a sec. So you can just see, even just on this show, and even just with everybody around you, that there is that short-term mindset in the market, right? Because nobody thinks long-term anymore. People can barely think about the next TikTok video or the last TikTok video, right? People are not thinking, what's a long-term deal nowadays? What's long term?
I think
Five
we're being
years?
Very boomerish here. Like, I think we're being like a bunch of boomers sitting around. Like, I'm just saying, like, we're saying, okay, kids these days, they don't work as hard. But the boomers said the same thing about us, right? And they said the same thing about us, that we're not long term. I remember being said, like, we don't work as hard as the older guys.
I think it's my generation is saying that too. Go ahead. Not just,
I mean, all
generation.
I think it's just perpetual, right? I think the big thing is that you have social media now. So you just kind of have a consolidated view of what everybody says. But I think it just, this pattern just repeats.
Well, that's what I'm saying with when we are talking about how hard it is versus affordable, it was fucking hard at every stage. Actually, maybe at my stage, it wasn't so hard, to be honest with you. It seemed like things were just kind of rolling when I was getting married, right? Early. Actually, that's not even true because we had the 2001, like everything crashed and went crazy. Like it's just been crazy forever, and people have had to shift to this short term, make money off this house or this condo or this flip or this land somehow, because like how else could you make easy money when you had a job, right? How else was there a way to actually make big money for normal people? But a normal
person
back
in our day
it.
Even back in our day, I think people are still taking shortcuts, thinking short term. There's just some people that they're just gonna adapt that mindset, right? They're gonna want to do like hacks and a bunch of nonsense, right? They're not gonna be thinking, hey, what's my career looking long term? You know, what do I have to do? Like, you know, with me, like I wanted to do accounting, I had to do my accounting designation 3 years post undergrad. Then I had to do a bunch of time at a certain company. I had to do a bunch of stuff, right? So, look, I think net net, the laziness argument, I think that's null. I think I think current generation, prior generation, I think it's maybe the same. I think what's part of the problem is the fact that things are more unaffordable, so it is more difficult. We'll have to recognize that. But to the contrary, young people, like TK is saying, they have a lot more opportunity to do, to make money in different ways that we didn't have, right? So, you know, and I think people need to take stock of the fact that if you're in the GTA, you're already winning because there's an abundance of opportunity here in just many different ways, right? Like, it's much better here than being in Timmins. Sure, in Timmins, you can buy a house for 150 grand, but, or I don't know how much
that even
cost.
Better just Peterborough or even right, Barry.
But,
like,
no, but if you live in GTA, your neighbors basically should be fairly wealthy, right? Like, how else can you have a goddamn house here?
You bought it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Right? But you still
but
have
your
to be able
to your house. Yeah.
That's not right. You're still wealthy though. I mean, you have, yeah, if you bought a house 30 years ago, you probably have a decent amount of equity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing well.
You actually, you know, you would hope, but I'm finding out with downsizers that that is not necessarily always the case. A lot of people have remortgaged their houses a lot, right, a lot more than I expect, at least the ones I'm talking to, because I guess they're considering selling. So this is what I'm seeing. I'm not saying it's a widespread thing, mm-hmm, but a lot of people have to rely on their homes to survive. Well, and that is true.
Yeah. Boomers, Gen X, like everybody is lazy. And they, like a lot of people sat back and got fat on their house getting more valuable, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people used it as an ATM, or when times were tough, you know, they just took out a line of credit and it didn't matter because it's okay, we can absorb the monthly payment. So who cares that there's a $250,000 loan against the house now? And so a lot of people did that. And then when that was just kind of normal, you added into it like, hey, why don't you take out a line of credit for 1% or 2% and then buy another thing with it? It's an easy, quick way to make even more money, you lazy fucker who, yes, it adds value. There's a, you know, I get it. I mean, this is my life, but like it doesn't, right? And this is what I keep saying is the solution is to get this pool of bandito investors who know they're flipping a piece of future paper, right? To invest in a pool of investors who want to build a fucking purpose-built rental building.
That'll happen over time, Daryl. Just right now, the opportunity was to make a lot more money than any fund was offering through pre-construction.
Quick
and now
easy.
Everyone's got burned. Nobody's selling. I'm getting calls now from builder clients of mine who, like, you know, I've worked with in the past, done a few projects, whatever, infill lots, things like that. And you know, they're all in the same position now, which is they can't sell. I had a guy out in like Kitchener-Waterloo area where, you know, they're reaching out to me saying like, you know, we've got this great project that's going to be, and I'm like, so how much is sold? And they're like, you know, six. And like, you know, they need their financing. So they're trying to find ways to be able to talk to agents directly. There are so many of those projects that will not sell. They will not get their financing. I hope they don't have a huge amount of debt on the property and they can carry it, because otherwise they're in for a rude awakening, right? Because that's why we're getting a lot of sites under receivership now. It's the places who carried a lot of debt, who ran to the end of the line. They were like, as long as I get it sold by 2024, I'm going to be done. And in 2021, 2022, you know, they had delays, they had issues. 2023 came, they said, oh my God, they went to sell. Couldn't get the percentage sales that they needed. And so now their lenders are taking them over. And those situations are happening right now. So there's a ton of people who are not going to be building new construction. Those sites will not happen. There's a ton of people who are scared. They won't buy pre-construction. They won't go to the builders anymore. And then, Daryl, I believe you're absolutely right, is then they'll say, well, what do I do with my money? And there'll be people who are going to say, well, we're building a building and this building's happening. It's already got everything we need and you can get your share. And the returns are getting higher and higher. If you look at what these guys are offering, I mean, it used to be like 5, 6, 7%. And you're like sticking your money in there and you're just kind of waiting around. Now they're all 15%+ returns. They're offering
a lot of the capital allocators, like I don't want to name names, but they're always offering 20+, 20 to 25. Like what you net may be a little bit less than that, but that's been around. Like if you are putting money in a private equity fund that will go and then lend to all the developers, they've always advertised 20+ during COVID, before, like. And these are 5-year.
Well, I'll name Equiton as one of them. And like, they were never close to that. But were they the private fund?
Wasn't Graybrook always around 20%?
Yeah, Graybrook has
Graybrook had theirs, but those were like long-term development things that were like
You're putting in money for 5 to 7 years.
Yeah,
and what are you talking about?
Mix for houses?
No, that was a development fund. The one I'm talking about was like private REITs for like their multifamily funds or they've got a development fund. They've got other funds. Right. Those type of stuff, and they trade similar to what some of the public REITs are trading at, and you look at what the shares are and how much the returns are, and they're minimal. They were minimal. Like so, I said, they've all now had to step up their game in order to be able to attract money.
Well, I just don't understand why it doesn't just right now. Like, these are people that want to lend someone money basically and get out when the thing's like built, right? So how is that not a good thing in a purpose-built rental scenario? It's like, oh, you want to put your money in, you can keep up ownership portion once the building's built, or you can cash out once the building's built and somebody else can. It's like fractional ownership. It makes so much sense to me. And you
it
have
doesn't
all
make
these...
sense to me, though. Like, think about it. I sorry to interrupt, but I just want to say, like, we're missing two very critical components. Number one, there's no leverage, and then there's no tax deferral. Or, for example, like... The only reason real estate is so great for the individual person is because, number one, the leverage, 5-to-1 or 4-to-1 leverage, and then primary residence, obviously tax-free, and if it's a secondary property, potentially capital gains, right? So nothing comes close. That's why real estate is so popular here, because there's no other tool left for the regular person here to make this type of money, especially in many cases, tax-free or with much smaller tax burden. The only other one is the lifetime capital tax gains exemption. If you sell a business after 2 years, I think it's like $930,000. But most people are never going to qualify for that. They're never going to start a business and then sell it. They're not going to have that exit. But so that's why real estate, it's for the leverage and for the tax reasons. And a REIT doesn't do it. And investing in any
that's
of these
no
private
one...
funds just yeah. doesn't, it's not even close.
But the options were pre-construction. And so now
okay, so
that
pre-construction had
to be taken off the table.
Yeah. Here's my take, pre-construction, I don't know if you guys, Daryl, you might know this, okay? There's this, when I was graduating university, I had a buddy that pulled money out of his OSAP to put a deposit on a pre-construction condo
legend.
In Markham, okay?
Oh,
he's an absolute legend, okay?
Yeah.
And people don't believe this when I say it, but you should know this because you have been around this longer than I have. There was a time when pre-construction cost less than resale. People on Twitter argued that was never the case.
Yeah, because people didn't want to live in Toronto back then. It was a shithole.
But it's not even that. It's because why am I buying something that doesn't exist? Like, I want a discount for buying something that doesn't exist versus right here, I can buy and it exists.
You were marketing to a different user. You weren't marketing to an investor. You were actually marketing to somebody that was buying the thing to live in. So it's like, it was totally different then too, right? You didn't
hit
65% before you got your financing. Like, and that's what's happening right now, actually, which is interesting that you say that. I had this conversation yesterday. You mentioned it earlier, is there's going to be like a rejig of the market, because what we have right now is a glut of units that nobody really wants and a buyer pool of locals, like people that want to buy something to live in is what is out there looking right now. But you just have a bunch of investor units available, like shitty, tiny garbage units. And so now you have buildings that are coming online now that are selling to that same mentality because they started the process 5-6 years ago, 3 years ago. Right. But now it's all end users. So if you're building a 335 square foot, studio, how many end users actually want to move into that? How many people are looking for that shit? So I can't imagine what's going to happen in the condo space in the next year or two, because like, who the hell wants all this shit? Look at some of these buildings, how many assignments there are listed on the MLS. Right now.
So with pre-construction, I think we need to recognize, similar to the way we talk about young people, right? Like, I'm of the opinion that, they're not lazy, they're hardworking, things are more difficult, but expectations are also higher. Similar with pre-construction, back in 08, when this guy went and bought something for less than resale, eventually things started creeping up. So it was 5% over resale, then it was 10%. Pre-construction would be 10-15% over resale. And that 10% band stayed maybe from 2010 up until like 2015-16. And then it started creeping back up to the point where during COVID, you were selling places for 30% premium in pre-construction. So if an equivalent unit was $1,000 per square foot, pre-construction down the street was 1300. Oh, sure, you can make the argument it's going to be a newer building, this and that. But what's happening now, it's like that spread has gone so far. And there's a number of reasons for that, right? To cost to build and levies and all this other stuff. But the point is the spread is so far out now that nothing makes sense. And I don't think pre-con ever makes the comeback. Like we've had 20 years that where pre-con made thousands and maybe tens of thousands of millionaires. I know just about every person that I know has made money on pre-construction. So the belief was there and it rolled them out this far. But at this point, pre-construction is not coming back, I don't believe, to the same degree. It has. So many people have been burned. I can name you one building right now. There's 8+ lawsuits just registered on Canly. You can go look them up. And that's just the ones that are registered. And there's the pending stuff in a building right now. Buyers not closing. That's right. In some case, you know, I don't want to disclose too much, but yeah, buyers are not closing. That's the biggest reason. But let's call it, they sold out at $1,600 per square foot. You're trying to flip, unload the assignment at a loss at $1,300, but you can just go down the street, buy resale for $1,000. So what's the point? So even if you're selling at a loss, the spreads have gotten so far out that it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And this is why, the condo space is going to decouple. Not so much because of macroeconomic factors or all the economy. It's going to decouple because certain buildings are just trash. They're just trash buildings. And Vancouver, this already started happening. In Vancouver, you will see a decoupling of quote-unquote good buildings versus bad. The prices are completely different. They're down. They're next to each other. Same thing is going to start happening here. And then, and with all this new supply that's coming in, I mean, I'm not overly impressed with the new stuff. Like I just, you know, again, I don't want to name actual condo units, but I looked at PDIs. I've been through a bunch of them. And it's like, what is happening here?
And we're banning foreign buyers.
No, and even worse. Like, okay, so
think about it. That was who was buying so many units at one point. Foreign buyers. We should say ban on foreign buyers other than assignments and new construction.
Other than the ones that want to buy stuff.
Right? Think about it. Foreign buyers could come in and start buying these things up like crazy again and keep people building.
So, but think this whole thing through, okay? So now you're trying desperately to incentivize builders to build. There is a demand for people to live in things with roofs and heat, right? Nobody wants to build, okay? And on top of it, nobody wants to buy anything really because it's too bloody expensive. So what happens, right? Naturally, I think what happens is the rules have to change on the condos because you're not selling 65% to people that are going to live in the thing 5 years from now. Because who really can like buy a condo and live in it five, maybe six, could be eight, like maybe who knows when you're moving into this thing, but who can plan like their life like that? So it's not realistic. So either the rules have to change, right? Or construction times need to get shorter, or everything timeline has to get shorter, or part of that process in changing is that now you don't need as many sales, or you don't need as much equity, or you need even more equity because you don't have the sales. Sorry. So what does that mean? Now it's closer to building a purpose-built rental, right? So all of those things combined together, right? Where there's no demand for the condo. There's nobody willing to build the condo. There's a lot of people that need roofs over their heads. And you're forcing the pro forma to need more equity like a purpose-built rental. I mean, guess what's going to start getting built more of? Purpose-built rentals. And everybody's saying people want to own. Nobody wants to rent. But guess what? You're not going to have a fucking choice because the average house is going to be $2 million. Right? The average condo, I don't even know what's going to be with condos, but they're going to be bigger, right? Because more people need to live in them. They're not going to be the micro units. They have to be two bedrooms and not two bedrooms in 700 square feet, like a real two bedrooms that the end user wants to move into. And they got to be like available, like when they want to move into them, right? The whole thing has to change.
Do you know the history of Greybrook? I might, butcher this a little bit. I just remember Greybrook, when they started building, I think their big home run was Liberty Village. They developed, from what I remember, a bunch of stuff in Liberty Village. And if my memory serves me correct, Liberty Village was supposed to be a rental. Like a lot of that, those things were actually designed to be purpose-built rentals, and they did a last-minute flip the switch where they turned them into condos just because the monetary side of things made way more sense. But they were originally slated to be actual rentals. So we could be reverting back to that where that makes a lot more sense. So I actually agree with you. That makes a lot more sense going forward.
Yeah, they're always going to make the decision that makes them the most amount of money. I mean, but what Daryl's trying to say, I guess, is that the option for them to be able to do purpose-built rentals might be forced because they'll look at their condo numbers and say, well, like if I'm going to have to come up with that much money and those are going to be my returns, why not own the building and keep it? Because if the bank's going to be financing it. But the whole problem around that, though, is really just the lending guidelines. I mean, and that's something that right now the federal government doesn't have the power to change overnight. And I think OSFI needs to get involved, and there's probably a lot of different lenders that need to be created. CMHC needs to, you know, be more proactive. Honestly, I'm very optimistic about the changes. I have been saying this for a couple months now that it's going to be tax changes.
They added a tax change actually this week also.
Yeah.
There's a...
What was it? I remember hearing about it, but I'm trying to remember what it was.
It was the capital... Hang on a sec.
Oh, so the capital cost allowance.
Yeah, from 4% to 10%.
Yeah. So that's going to be something. So now people can depreciate. So there you go. So perfect. That's a good start. So now when people are writing off depreciation on their building, and Vask, you can explain this better than I can.
Yeah.
This is going to allow them to be able to, you know, have less income in the property.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you
have more tax
explain
benefits.
This one, Vask, because it's not.
So getting into the half year rules and stuff, just we're going. So let's say you have $1 million building, 4%, you used to be able to depreciate $40,000 in the first year. Now you can do $100,000. And then after that, it's $900,000 net that's left. Then another 10% on that. That's another $90,000 in the second year, ignoring the half year rule for tax purposes. So yeah, that's just, you're just deferring more tax, and it gives you, that's assuming that you're, see, the interesting thing about this is assuming you're making money. So if I'm not making
need to
money,
defer. You need to defer because you're making money.
Assuming you're making money.
That's assuming
that's
I
such
have
a
profit.
Great point.
Right, that's
funny
assuming
enough.
I actually have taxes to defer. Otherwise, what you're creating in tax, this is called a loss carry forward. Now, there's value in that. For example, there are people out there that buy bankrupt companies and they buy them for the loss carry forward. So let's say somebody lost $500,000 in their company. I can go and buy that for, let's say, $100,000, because the $500,000 loss carry forward that can offset taxes for me in my profitable company is worth more than $100,000. But anyway, there's all these different things you can do. But yeah, again, this is like, I don't know if it does anything. It doesn't necessarily mean to me that, here's what I'll just say. Running a business.
New stuff. New stuff. It helps.
I think one thing that.
That's a pretty big difference though, from 4 to 10.
Of course it is. But here's the thing I will say. In accounting, one of the most important things I learned as an accountant when I was a practicing accountant is that, and this is from accountants, never run your business based on tax. So like, you always run your business based on profit, not on how am I going to save tax. You always want to maximize for profit, you're not trying to play defense minimizing for tax. And I think this is where a lot of people get caught up in the game of thinking, oh, I should do this or I should do that to try to minimize tax. But really, it should always be about growth, scaling, and making more profit.
Taxes won't be a problem then. Yeah.
No, I think just says to some people, like, this gets you over the line. You know, like this from marginal.
What he said though for that the business example you gave was there's going to be other big players who might be able. So MERBs back in the 70s, the issue that was taken advantage of was that people were using the profits from their other businesses and writing them off in the depreciation of their real estate assets. And so it got a bunch of people who weren't in real estate to build because they said, well, if I'm going to get tax benefits by buying this real estate and depreciating the hell out of it, then I'm going to, you know, build more real estate. Even though the real estate's a loss, I've got these profits in these other businesses. And so if that's something that they can figure out, which I don't know if this does or not, it just means that it brings more players into the game. And when you got these big, huge companies out there who are like, you know, mega, you know, multi-billion dollar multinational companies, and they're like, why don't we just go and build about 1,000 units in the GTA there? And, you know, we'll use that for some of our tax benefits. Like, that's what gets things built, you know, when you get people like that, heavy hitters. And that's what I think will create housing. I don't know if this
just,
is it
just, or not. Just on the topic of that increasing the depreciation, that's just a short-term benefit at the end of the day. Like,
yeah,
it's just a short-term benefit up front. It's just short-term benefit up front, but it's like, it's not like the net benefit's any different. So I don't know. Again, these are just like, I think these are nice things to just say, but they're just a waste of air. Like, does it move the needle? In my opinion, it doesn't. I think most of this stuff doesn't, but sounds
well,
nice.
There's enough stuff that
we've
they've
heard it
thrown
here.
At the wall now in the last few weeks that it's like, if you do a combination of some of this stuff, like, it will definitely help add supply. But
the tax-free loan for the basements, for example, that I wasn't aware of that. I think that's great. I think that for sure should do, that should move the needle 100%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's role play this one quickly. Okay, so I own a house.
Who am I?
You're the contractor, and you're the
Harold,
lender.
I'm here to
guys.
Renovate your basement. All right, that's going to be $140,000. How would you like to pay?
Well, there's this new loan program, and I was hoping that I could just borrow all the money from the loan program, and get like a pretty like a room with a hot plate and a little mini fridge in the basement, but get the whole $40,000.
I know all about the program. I know exactly what you're doing, and we'll reduce some of the costs. I'll cut back. Hold on, let me check here.
I can
probably do it for
40.
$110,000. So with that $40,000 loan, you owe me $70,000. How'd you like to pay?
So and now I'm going to need a loan, right, Vaz? So, like, where's my incentive to do this?
Don't worry. Prime plus 2%.
Other than
at the bank
Vaz's
to get your line of
brokerage
credit.
Fee and TK's commission or TK's profits here, like, where is the benefit to the person? Like, how does this incentivize something that wasn't already going to happen? Right. Like, okay, so maybe, okay, I'm kind of hemming and hawing about it. Now I can get this. Okay, honey, we can do it the way you want to do it. Now we're going to get this cheap money.
The loan will be legal units. And so it'll create legal units where someone was going to just put in a kitchen and bathroom. And now they're saying, oh, but I get this great interest, like low interest loan.
It's not creating more units. It's creating more legal units.
Well, they're not going to be
That's a good point because, okay, let's just make it simple. Let's say a legal basement apartment is going to be $120,000, and let's say one that's done to spec but not legal is going to be 70, right? Because there is a big price difference if you're not doing everything to spec, right? So let's say 80. Let's to be fair, let's say 80 versus 120. So that's kind of like that loan. So I think there are also a lot of people that are on the fence about doing this. So maybe this gives them that incentive to go and do it. But yeah, maybe it doesn't move the needle. I mean, 40,000 is not sufficient, but I think it's still better than nothing. And I think it's something that at least people will take advantage of rather than some of these other incentives that nobody cares about.
But the idea is to incentivize stuff that wasn't already happening, right? And what we're seeing is a lot of stuff that is maybe gets you just across the line if you weren't there. You know, it's not, okay, holy shit, this is so great that I wasn't even thinking about making a rental suite, but this is like a no-brainer. I have to make a rental suite now that they offered me this wonderful incentive. It's not, what the fuck do I know? But like, if I'm already thinking about doing it, this is an added bonus for me, but it didn't change my mind.
But okay. So let's talk about this. I changed the windows of this house in 2018 and there was an incentive. I can't remember the incentive now, but it was like a limited, I think it was a year or two. Yeah. So I think this is similar. I think it does spur some sort of activity. So just because.
Windows.
But
you're
I would no,
it might not have.
No.
This
that's
is what I'm
thing.
Asking.
There's people putting in heat pumps
this is,
right now.
This
because,
is why
you know,
I think it's important to note. You can defer. You can defer. But now I've been thinking about this basement apartment. And you know what? Here, I'm going to do it because this hasn't been around. So it just got me off the sidelines. So I think it should make a difference. Just because I was thinking about it doesn't mean I was going to do it.
Right. So it's a little nudge for the people that are like,
maybe not.
Okay.
Like I have a roof. I have to replace my roof. And I started quoting like 2 years ago and I saw the quotes. I'm like, no way. And these guys are still texting me asking, do you still want to do your roof? My roof's fine, but I'm one of those. I want to be proactive, right? I don't want problems, but it's like, I'm up there. I'm like
waiting for the,
I can still get another program. Year out of it. So I'm not, I can keep deferring. Maybe I'll wait for this. Hey, if the government's listening, maybe they can do a roof program.
Do a roof program.
I'll wait for that. Everything program. How come there aren't more programs?
We need more programs, but
we're subsidized like crazy, man.
We got to summarize everything we learned today, okay? So one, all these new government programs. Your opinion, based on everything that you said, is the $40,000 secondary suite low interest loan seems to be the one that might be the most effective. The rest seem to be less effective than.
Yeah, and this is coming, just to preface that, this is coming from somebody that hasn't followed, read thoroughly any of these things. So I just,
no problem.
You know, it's my opinion may not be the
best. Really,
we missed one major
anyways.
Thing, a major thing.
Well, the only one that really matters that's actually going to do anything for creating housing, but unfortunately has the reverse effect of making people buy more housing, is lowering interest rates.
No, but there's also this new one that think is a fuck up.
It's going to build a whole bunch more housing once we lower interest rates again. And everyone will be back to the party buying again.
Last point. Linking to the CRA for the cutting down on fraud. They're going to finally link mortgage applications to the CRA somehow, or at least they're saying they're going to. So what effect does that have? Doesn't that stop a ton of people being able to buy houses? I don't even think I said it a bunch of times. Honestly, guys, if they check everybody's mortgage documentation, how many have something that is technically considered fraudulent?
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
Can you honestly imagine, if we're being honest here, it's gotta be 80% have some kind of bullshit.
Yeah, your heat bills or something. You know,
whatever.
The guy's like, your heat bill is $400 a month. No, listen, we're gonna say it's 180 because for your square
footage, is this actually on the table right now?
Yeah. Federal government announces crackdown on mortgage documents.
Yeah, link the CRA with the mortgage application so that when
people
they
been
make
saying
the,
it forever,
like it's like
right,
look, you
I just
make
don't know
grand a year.
It.
It says right here on your file. Why can't they do that? They rely on
PDF. Because I mean, it's
NOA.
No. They can. It's just like real estate. So everybody thinks
they don't want
real estate commissions. They think that, you know, technology is going to come and save like real estate commissions, the real estate industry. It's like you can eliminate agents. That the tech has always been there. The tech has been there 20 years ago. It's the bureaucracy of everything. That this is why real estate agents exist for the most part, or at least many of them. And the same thing here, right? The tech is there. It's a non-issue. It's just somebody chooses not to implement these things. Just like recently, listen, I got off social media almost 2 months ago, but I did see one tweet that I found. I had to post it. Somebody posted a tweet of somebody offering to put in fake offers on behalf of other agents for like $400 or $500 bucks. And I tagged Rico and Trevor, whatever it was. And I told them, I will spend 2 to 3 hours with you. I can show you exactly, if you give me the data set from the real estate board, I will show you exactly with 95% confidence how to identify all high-risk agents that are doing this. It's very simple for me. I'm not going to say how I will do it, but for me, if I have the data set, I'm an Excel nerd, I'll pull it together. But does anybody want me to do that? No. So that's why I asked you, is this actually a table to be done? Because I just have no faith in them actually doing anything, because the tools are there, everything's there. Somebody chooses not to touch this.
Well, they'll consult on it for the next 7 years, but it's
right.
Tabled.
Well, there you go.
Right.
So that is somebody
it's
blocking
tricky.
It from happening.
Yeah, it's
There's
very
no...
tricky to download some information from a website. Like, it'll take them 10 years to get that going, and that's a $3 trillion app. But anyways, TK has to go.
I gotta go. So, Vass, where can people find you? Give us the plug. We want people to
the Vass City
especially...
Estates YouTube channel for the best seasonal stats. Here, once a month, I post the best seasonal stats. I'll stand by that.
He's not on Twitter anymore, guys. You can't find him on Twitter.
Off
He's keeping
Twitter.
a healthy
TikTok
mindset.
Either.
I'm off Twitter. I'm not on the Twitter. I'm not a tweeter.
Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Vass,
we'll learn.
I think you're our most, he's got to be at the top of the list for most visited guests, right?
He's got to be near the top. I'd say Skrinko is
one
the
or
top.
For two.
Skrinko's probably
Jordan's the man, but if I
you're
can be close
up there,
I'll be happy.
Good.
Hopefully you don't get crushed in the comments this time.
I probably will.
I think
but
you're
okay,
very
man.
Safe.
That's okay.
You're very safe.
Okay.
This time.
I get crushed
you
once
lessons.
A week.
TK handles the heat.
He doesn't give a fuck. This is his fucking superpower. The guy just he's got such blinders. It's unreal. He doesn't give a shit.
It pays to be.
He goes and sells 18 more houses and says fuck everywhere.
There you go. Vass, we appreciate you. Okay. So we'll
guys.
Talk soon and we'll see you in the comments.
TK goes sell another house. Enjoy. Have a great day.